et bienvenue to the final Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. For one more time, my name's Kate Borsay, and in the studio, it's our dream team final duo. First up, with 9 appearances for Team Offside Rule, it's our resident author and academic writer of many Lioness books, the next one of which she's got to finish pretty quickly after this show. It's Carrie Dunn. How exhausted are you?
I'm tired, I miss the sunshine, and I'm feeling really sad that this lovely World Cup is over.
It's a sharder, isn't it? It really is. Next, alongside Carrie, with 7 appearances, flying the flag briefly for Brazil, it's Arsenal Women's Ask Cast host Tim Stillman.
Hello there.
Tim's got a bright orange shirt on. Guess who he was supporting today? Well, after 146 goals, 52 matches, 24 teams and 9 stadia, it all came down to this, and there could only be one winner.
Goal! US leads! Rose up the middle. Looking, cutting, shooting, goal! Bravo to another US! That's it! US wins their 4th World Cup!
Well, nearly 58,000 turned up in person and a whole lot more tuned in via the TV to watch the USA retain their world crown, beating the Netherlands 2-0 in Lyon. No 12-minute rule here. Oh no, the Dutch withheld the pressure from USA for a good hour before they conceded a penalty converted successfully by Megan Rapinoe. A peach from Rose Lavelle followed and the job was done. The USA have now won back-to-back World Cups. Mission accomplished then, Carrie, for Jill Ellis's side. Not quite the walkover though that we expected, was it?
No, I really enjoyed the first hour of the match. I thought the Netherlands came out as well prepared as you'd have expected them to be. I think once they got past that kind of shaky 12-minute mark, they looked a little bit happier. I think there was kind of a certain amount of nerves around that, knowing that the USA had scored early on all their other matches. But yeah, the Netherlands had their chances. They had no real kind of incisive edge in the 6-yard box. But yeah, the USA did not have an easy game by any stretch of the imagination.
No, we had to wait well into the second half for that penalty to be given away by the Netherlands. You commented in a previous podcast, Tim, that Serena Weigman's got this exploding collar that's going to go off if she makes any changes. But she did make some changes for this one. Was that key? Was that the secret behind the success, the 60-minute success, I'll call it, for the Netherlands?
Yeah, it absolutely was. And full credit to her. I really didn't think she was capable of it. I really thought it was actually very smart the way she set up. She conceded the fact that Netherlands were not the favourites here and were likely not to have the ball, and kind of put Danielle van der Donk on the right-hand side to kind of help do a job on Megan Rapinoe, put Vivian Miedema in the 10 and Berenstein ahead of her on the counter-attack. And actually, I thought that was a really smart way to set up. And I thought it wrong-footed the USA for quite a long time. Unfortunately, I think they just ran out of steam, particularly once that goal goes in on 60 minutes. I'm sure in their kind of team talk and in their planning, they'd have chunked the game up a little bit and said, right, when we get to 60 minutes, we do this. And once it got to 60 minutes, of course, they concede, and it just kind of fell apart for them there.
It did indeed. Were the USA as good as we've seen them in this tournament, Carrie? Could they be accused of being a bit meh for certain points of this game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they were at full flow for very much of this game. I mean, Rose Lavelle's brilliant solo goal was kind of the sparkling moment. But, you know, the rest of the time, I think, yeah, there were misplaced passes. It was a little bit sloppy at times. But I think what kind of overrides it all is that just overweening will to win. It was just this kind of drive forward to that 90-minute point.
They just seemed to very clinically get the job done, don't they?
That Rose Lavelle, they've done that the whole tournament, really. I don't think there's a game where you've thought, oh, you know, Thailand accepted. There isn't really a game in this tournament where you thought, oh, they've been brilliant all the way through. But they've just got this. They always give you the impression, even when they're not playing that well, they just know how to get it done.
They are back-to-back world champions as well, USA. And it's fair to say they are a cut above the competition. But Netherlands certainly put in a good account of themselves. What was key to the Netherlands withholding the USA? Was it their defence? Was it their ability to hang on to the ball? Tim, how would you summarise where their success was? I guess for kind of future teams, because the more we can figure out this USA team, the better.
Yeah, I think because they've been playing a 4-3-3 since time immemorial, basically, and never change it. But they went to a four in midfield, and, you know, with someone like Daniel van der Donk kind of on the right, I mean, she wasn't really playing as a right winger in the traditional sense. She was there to help double up on Rapinoe. And I think they were just very compact, and it's the first time we've seen that in this competition. They kept their fullbacks back. Mm. They had four in midfield instead of three, and I think they just blocked things up for a little while.
They didn't have many chances, did they?
No.
No, so it was all about parking the bus, as Renee alluded to yesterday. And she did talk as well about breaking up the game into chunks. So very, very wise words there from Tim Stillman. Do you think Serena Weigman, the Dutch coach, has perhaps warmed the hearts of a few more Dutch fans? There were, you know, quite divided opinions about her, and kind of seemingly amongst some of the players possibly about whether they really like her.
Yeah, maybe, because she showed something different in this game, which I think a lot of Dutch fans have been kind of crying out for a while. I think she'll have to do a bit more, but to be honest, and I've been quite critical of her, but they won the Euros, they've got to the final here, and it's no shame to lose to the US. They're an inferior team in terms of talent. So you've got to say that when it matters, the Netherlands have been able to kind of turn up at the big moments. So, you know, and they've got a lot of their players are quite young as well. They've got another couple of tournaments in them. I mean, you could see them challenging for the Euros again, challenging for the next World Cup. So there's definitely a platform there for them.
And we have to remember as well that this is only the Netherlands' second ever World Cup. Sorry, Van Veenendaal, we've mentioned her in the podcast before, but she made some fantastic saves in the first off, which were totally crucial, really, to the way that the Netherlands were able to hang on to this for so long.
Yeah, we talked in the preview show about who would get the most attention, whether it be Van Veenendaal or Naya. And I said that Van Veenendaal is going to be the one who's got more to do, but she'll relish it. And she really did. I mean, she had so much to do, particularly in that first half. And it was pretty much thanks to her that they got to halftime with it still at 0-0.
Rose Lavelle, a wonderful goal from her, Tim. And if we're looking to the future of the USWNT, she would be one of this kind of standout names. And, you know, she's, what is she, 24 or 25? So she seems to be quite old. But the way that the college system works over there is that we don't, you know, see 17-year-old hotshots for the American team. It does happen a little bit later. So we liked her second goal. Lovely, lovely goal. Anyone else stand out to you in this team in terms of where the USA go from here?
I think that midfield in general, when you look at the way they've kind of rotated that midfield, they've got four really good players to play in that midfield three in Muis, Julie Ertz, Lindsay Horan as well, and Rose Lavelle for me has been probably the best player in the tournament. And I think you look there and that they're just so, so strong there. And kind of up front, they've got, like, you know, Megan Rapinoe probably won't play another World Cup, but someone like Kristen Press to come in. So they've got a lot of talent there. But I just think that midfield was really what kind of won them this tournament. They just dominated pretty much every team because they just had so many players who know exactly how to read the temperature of a game.
Jill Ellis, the only coach to ever win two World Cups. Carrie, did she get it right the whole time in this tournament?
Some of Jill Ellis's choices can be somewhat tactically puzzling at times, and I think it's to the discredit of the other teams. They don't punish some of those choices. I know particularly the USA fans were incensed at the lack of Lindsay Horan during the tournament, saying that she's probably the best player in the world, or certainly up there. Why is she not getting to feature more? But, you know, Jill Ellis has just gone out and won you another World Cup, so there's not really that much you can criticise. Again, she's got the job done.
Well, let's find out whether there was a suitable post-match showdown from the USA. We're joined by Molly Hudson of The Times. Thanks, Molly, for coming along. Have the Americans yet found the words to describe their victory today?
They certainly have. I think Megan Rapinoe was so desperate to put her point across that she raced out of doping control to get back to the post-match press conference. But there's some really lovely quotes from Coach Jill Ellis where she talks about, you know, the fact that the spotlight can really burn some players, and particularly with the sorts of things that Megan has combated in this tournament. But in fact, for her, it just makes her star shine even brighter.
And did Jill Ellis get a phone call halfway through?
She did, yes. I think her mum was trying to FaceTime her, bless her, which, you know, I'm sure we can all relate to in this situation. But she was like, no, I'm sticking with it. I'm carrying on.
I'm assuming it was valid. Oh my goodness, is that you? Oh, I think that's me. It's probably my mother FaceTiming me, so excuse me one second. It is, Mom. Sorry, can't talk right now. All right, sorry about that. She's probably pissed. She's Scottish. All right.
What's Jill Ellis had to say specifically about this side and perhaps her future? What were the key lines from the USA coach?
I think she was very keen to stress how difficult this triumph had actually been, more difficult than any of the others. The fact that, you know, after the Olympics, they had to almost rebuild and come up with a new strategy to succeed all over again and to be the very best. And, you know, they've shown tonight that they can do that. And I think they've shown how far ahead they still actually are. And she was really proud of that. And, you know, I think that somebody dared to ask her that her contract was nearly up. And she sort of said, well, you must know more than I do then. I think for tonight, the focus is firmly on victory and you know, rightly so, because it's an incredible achievement.
What about the legacy of this? Because a bit like here in the UK, and I'm not saying that we've won four World Cups because we haven't, but there is an issue with translating success on the international stage to success domestically and getting bums on seats in terms of watching domestic games.
Definitely. I think both Jill and Serena spoke about that for their respective nations. And, you know, perhaps the US are further ahead than of the Netherlands and of every other country in respect of that. But there's definitely still things to be worked on. I mean, of course, the US have secured the ESPN deal for the rest of the season off the back of this tournament. So that's a step in the right direction in the short term. But I think, you know, it's very important that they do build on this and get more interest in the domestic leagues, because, you know, that's what these players do week in, week out. And that's what, you know, they're just as good as they are on the national stage. It's just that so many more see it on the national stage.
Thanks very much to Molly Hudson of The Times. There's some good stuff there. I presume, Carrie, that Megan Rapinoe's still not going to the White House, though.
I would imagine she would not be, no. I would be interested to know whether any of the rest of the squad would go to the White House or whether they would not in a stance of solidarity.
It would tell you about a real divide in that squad, wouldn't it? Because it's like Brexit here, isn't it? You know, only when you're forced to make a decision do you, as long as everyone reveals what their decision is, do you ever see a divide. I saw a picture on social media of a sort of van, and inked onto the windows was Pino for POTUS. You know, like, yes, she's absolutely going to go for it. But she has had a wonderful tournament, it has to be said, and has won the Golden Boot.
Yes, she has won the Golden Boot. I should also point out that Rapinoe is too young to run for president still, isn't she? Haven't you got to be 35? Is that right?
Do you have to be a certain age?
I think so.
Wow, or double it if you're Donald Trump anyway. So we think Megan, that this will be Megan's last World Cup, but we're going to see the USA in the Olympics. Would that be the time that you'd see someone like Megan Rapinoe bowing out, unless injury forces her otherwise beforehand?
Yeah, I think that she would want to do kind of a one last victory lap. I think she'd go out a major tournament rather than kind of bowing out afterwards.
It wouldn't just be a lap though, would it? It would be champions written on your back.
It would be.
It would be outstretched arms.
And probably a little crown maybe as well to go with it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What you heard in the crowds as well were the USA fans. And can I just say, loads and loads of US fans. There was a square of orange, but the Oranje supporters were prevented from marching to the stadium today because it was too hot, apparently. So it was a risk to public health. But tons of USA support, and they could be heard shouting, equal pay, equal pay. You're a clever person, Carrie, an academic. You will have looked at pay disputes in the past and how women's footballers have been treated by their national associations. Do we see good news ahead for the USWNT?
I mean, I would hope so. I mean, the thing is, this has been going on for ages. I mean, they were triple world champions when this all started. Then they're quadruple world champions. You'd hope they'd be able to use this for leverage. I think I'm right in saying that they now get $250,000 each in the current pay deal, having won the World Cup, whereas the men on their current pay deal, had they won it, would get something like $2.5 million each.
It was well over that, yeah.
So,
yes, yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of inequalities that we're talking about. they're on different contracts, on different deals. And so that's the kind of unequal pay we're talking about. It's not in terms of kind of like, you know, per minute or whatever. No. It's this kind of prize money stuff.
And it's also kind of bonuses and I suppose privileges as well, the way that they travel to the games, what's paid for and what's not paid for as well. I think it will be key, won't it? Because if this isn't resolved, Tim, would there be a point when the USA team say, actually, no, forget it, we're not going to play?
I think they've shown a willingness to do that before, certainly. And actually, there's a really interesting comparison now, because the men's team playing the Gold Cup final tonight, and I would wager that that won't get a tenth of the attention that the women's national team has had. And this, you know, with all the kind of the talk has been, are the USA a bit arrogant? Do they over celebrate and things like that? This, to me, is the story that should really come out of the US winning. The numbers are damning in terms of how much revenue they bring in compared to the men, how much more they win.
Yeah.
You know, their shirt is the number one selling shirt of all time on the Nike website, you know.
Yeah, they actually, what the women's team bought in after 2015, levelled the books and put the US soccer into the black, as opposed to being in the red, which is where they were after the men didn't play in their World Cup. So they've done huge things in terms of balancing the books.
I think what's important to note also is that the USA women's national team's constant success in recent years has been a reflection of, and we've talked about this before, the Title IX investment from the 70s. So if the USA soccer establishment can see that equal money into girls and women's sport at that level is important, they should also then be able to see that equal pay and investment in women at the top level is vital as well.
It's true, it's true. Well, at the game and here to tell us all the post-match reaction from the Netherlands, not quite to be for them today, but I'm sure they've had some interesting things to say after the game. Let's speak to Dutch women's football journalist Anne-Marie Posma.
Obviously, it's not the outcome they were all hoping for. They gave it their all, and they're very, very proud of that. So that's actually the main feeling. They feel actually that they're so proud of what they achieved in this tournament. But they were teared up, and also from being tired, you know, playing the whole tournament. So they were teared up, but said, definitely, we're very, very proud of our silver medal. They said we wear it with pride.
Oh, nice. And actually, for 60 minutes, you managed to do something that no other team's done at this tournament, and not to concede. So there's a huge positive there, I think.
Yeah, well, me and my colleague, we had a little cheer after the 13th minute because for being the team that has held off the Americans as long, longer than anyone else, basically, this tournament. So that was awesome. And they had a clear tactic of how to play against them. And then it was nice to see that it worked out. But yeah, they were so well on defense. And then you could see when they had the ball that they were like either making the wrong choice or not capable of keeping it the ball in the team. That was a bit of a shame. So we didn't really create anything. That was a shame.
Your coach, Serena Weigman, afterwards mentioned that the average age is under 26 for that Netherlands side. So some hopeful thoughts then about what might happen in the future with a lot of those players developing.
Yeah, it makes it really good that they're going to the Olympics next year. It's a very promising team. Some people are already talking about the next generation, which is because it's so weird to think that this is a generation and it will be the next generation as well. You know, like this team will be at the Olympics and they will probably at the Euros in 2 years because they're all so young. But yeah, it's just because some of the players have been playing for the national team already for 10 years. Mm. So I hope there will be some new talent, of course, in the team that will be refreshing. But they have so much potential. So we'll be in the final again, for sure.
And what else did Weigman have to say after the match?
It just that she's really, really proud. Just, this is a team that is, they really bonded with each other. They fight for each other. And before the match, they told each other, okay, these are going to be your last 90 minutes or maybe even more, but it's going to be your last match. Give it your all. And that's what they did. And that's all she had to say. Same about Sari van Veenendaal, who's been chosen a goalie of the tournament.
Yeah.
That's an amazing achievement. And she's just very proud and looking forward to the future. She's looking forward to the Olympics and see what else this team can do.
Yeah, they've got that silver medal. What about your overall thoughts on the tournament from you personally, but also from a Dutch perspective?
Well, we didn't play our most beautiful football as we know we can. Me and my colleagues from the media have been really tough on them. But what you can see is that they proved us wrong. Like they told us, no, it's not our best game. But look what we can do. We can fight for each other when needed. And most important thing, we can win. They won every game except for this one. Yeah, they didn't even draw. And it has been like that since the Euros. So that's all basically what they told us now. Like, hey, you've been tough on us, but don't you see that we win everything? And that's my feeling too. Like, even when you think, it's not really okay, they still won their matches. And that was what really impressed me the most.
Thanks very much to Dutch women's football journalist Anne-Marie Posma. Well, the USA have taken it. This is their fourth World Cup, so all credit to them. And we've got some reaction from good, solid American famous people here. Billie Jean King says, congratulations to the USWNT on their fourth World Cup win. These athletes have brought more attention, support and pride to women's sport than perhaps any other team in history. It's long past time to pay them what they rightly deserve. Ellen DeGeneres says, the US women's soccer team are the world champions. I'm so happy. These women are the best of what our country represents. You're welcome on my show anytime. My World Cup runneth over. I'm sure they'll be a lot happier to go on Ellen's show than off to the White House. Samuel L. Jackson quite simply says, in big capital letters, USA women rule. Several exclamation marks. Hashtag never a doubt. We love those tough-talking Americans, don't we? Bit of breaking news for you folks. It's the news you all want as well. Donald Trump has tweeted. He says, congratulations to the US women's soccer team on winning the World Cup. Great and exciting play. America is proud of you all. Not my finest Donald Trump impression, but there you are. Alors on danse. Alors on danse. It's the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition with myself, Kate Borsay, Tim Stillman and Carrie Dunn in the studio with us. It has been a brilliant World Cup, hasn't it? Full of incredible moments. And we'll be having our Offside Awards a little later on. The statues are all lined up. Yes, they really are, in order for us to give these out. But first, here are some of our contributors giving their favourite moments from the last 4 weeks.
Hello, everyone. I'm Julien Laurence. I was covering the World Cup for ESPN and BBC 5 Live. My best moment of the competition has to be this quite incredible, I thought, France-USA game in the quarterfinals at the Parc des Princes in Paris. I've never seen an atmosphere like that at women's games before, I have to be honest, but I've also rarely seen an atmosphere like that in a men's game. And I know we have to stop comparing all of us, but that was exceptional.
It goes free, Rapido shot, go!
Oui!
Hi, I'm Lucia Pirola. I'm a women's football journalist for Radio Rossonera. My best World Cup moment is the late goal scored by Bonansea against Australia. It gave a great joy that nobody would ever expect.
Sul più bello! Facciamo gol ancora con lei! Barbara Bonansea! 2-1 per l'Italia! Bravissime!
Hi, my name is Kieran Tatham. I am at the FIFA Women's World Cup as a freelancer for FIFA. My highlight of the tournament would have to be the performance of Christiane Endler, the Chile goalkeeper, against the United States. I know that her country ended up losing that match 3-0, but I think if it hadn't been for Endler, the winning margin may have been larger. She proved herself as one of the best goalkeepers in the world across the three matches.
Trying to go outside of Toro, she does. The cross there, one flick, second one, save Endler! She's robbed press twice!
I'm Heather Dewar, and I'm the women's sports reporter at BBC Scotland. My best World Cup moment so far is a pretty tough one, but it could be standing in the commentary position at the Stade de France in Paris, as Scotland were waiting to take on Argentina. It was their last group game, everything riding on the result there. It just felt like such a huge moment. We'd had this almighty thunderstorm getting into the stadium, and I'd marched all the way to it with the fans, who were super hyped despite the rain. They were singing, dancing, there was a bagpipe player, a real Tartan Army extravaganza.
Hello, my name is Tom Gary. I've been very lucky to cover this tournament for the BBC website, and my best Women's World Cup moment so far, without doubt, has to be right back at the opening game and the spine-tingling atmosphere at the Parc des Princes as France took on South Korea, and 45,000 people singing Les Marseillais. That really got the hairs standing up on the back of the neck.
Jeff Kasouf, founder, EqualizerSoccer.com. Takeaways for me, another great World Cup. You know, I think it's something that we need to, certainly from a media perspective, but much more than that, is how do you sustain this now? And, you know, a team like an Argentina or a Chile or, you know, a Cameroon, all of these teams, they don't just go away now for 4 years. That we see them and we see investment in, on a league level, certainly from their federations, that they see there's value and that they want them to be better in 4 years.
Well, we've loved speaking to all of our media chums over in France during this World Cup. So a big thank you from the Offside Rule to everyone who has taken phone calls from us in the back of stadium, in corridors, in their hotel rooms, pulling over at a service station. That was Rob Harris from PA. Yeah, all sorts of different people speaking to us at different times. So thanks very much to everyone who's contributed. Don't forget, by the way, for England's best bits and a tournament review, there's a podcast full of it on our Spotify feed. It's the podcast before this one. Do check it out because there are some other favourite moments on there as well. Let's just pick up quickly on Jeff Kasouf's comment about investment. This leads on from our discussion earlier, of course. Chile and Cameroon, he was talking about, though, and their associations to be better in 4 years' time. An important point, I suppose, for these teams who have put in a really good showing at this World Cup, despite all the disputes, all the issues with their own national federations. Do you think that this World Cup will prove a turning point as well for countries getting behind their teams for the four-year period rather than just an 18-month period or a 12-month period?
I hope so. I mean, we've seen reports in the past kind of 48 hours that the intention is to expand the World Cup even further. So if we're going to do that, we're going to need to see a lot more federations investing properly in their teams if we're going to keep it as competitive and as high standard a tournament as we had this time round.
Well, as you say, Gianni Infantino, the FIFA president, says he wants to increase the Women's World Cup up to 32 teams and double its prize money, which sounds like big news, but I'll read the figures to you in just a moment. He wants to launch a Women's Club World Cup as well. Let's address that one first, Tim. Good idea or not, a Club World Cup? And when would you do it?
Yeah, I think the calendar might be the tricky thing there. I'm kind of more behind the idea for women's football than I am for men's football, for example. I do think there's a sense of kind of, you know, profile raising there, possibly. But I think I'd have to hear more about how they actually plan to do it, because I'm not entirely convinced around the logistics. Like you say, when do they do it with all these kind of calendars running concurrently? I'm not entirely sure about how that would work.
Well, Mr. Infantino's five-point plan, as we've mentioned, says that the prize money will be doubled. So this time it was doubled up to $30 million, but it will go up to $60 million for the next tournament. Just a quick reminder that the men's tournament has a total prize fund of $400 million, with winners receiving $38 million. I suppose we're going in the right direction, Carrie, is what we can kindly say about this gesture from FIFA.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's going to be a little while, I think, before we see anything kind of approaching equal pay when it comes to World Cup prize money. But I don't know, it's not the FIFA are short of cash, is it?
Well, he did say this money shouldn't be kept in Swiss bank accounts. So he kind of stitched himself up a little bit there. Quick note, by the way, on the US, WNT has its first beer sponsor. This is incredible, as is the fact that the comms team at US WNT has been decimated, and several of their journalists have come out and said, look, they don't even have a head of communications. So when you're trying to then promote what happens back at home, and we've got this issue in the WSL as well, although I think we are probably better supported by RFA. But Budweiser jumping on as the official beer sponsor, not just of the national team, but also of the domestic league as well. And there's a 14-game television deal with ESPN for the remainder of the US women's season, which is good news. The next World Cup, then, where's it going to be held?
For selfish reasons, I'd love it to be in Brazil. To be honest, I'm not sure that Brazil deserves it, given the kind of CBF's attitude towards women's football. But, you know, maybe this is part of what we've been talking about, you know, kind of almost shaming certain FAs getting behind.
Yes, exactly. It is a bit like giving someone the head boy or head girl badge, isn't it? Sometimes you give someone the responsibility because you want them to step up.
I think we're learning too much about your childhood, Kate. I'd like to see New Zealand, maybe, somewhere like that.
Okay, so you'd like to go the other side of the world.
Yeah. I mean, Brazil have had plenty of kind of major tournaments and major sporting events, and I think there have been lots of question marks around some of the practicalities and logistics and the political decision-making. Yeah, New Zealand.
Quick note, by the way, the host nation won't be decided until next year. Less time to prepare than France this time round. And also with the Men's World Cup playing later on in the year in Qatar, that gives FIFA less time to solely concentrate on it as well. I really hope, despite all that, it is a great success. But yeah, just a couple of little footnotes there to be aware of. All right, let's move on to who picked up all the glitzy awards at the end of this final match, summing up a great tournament for them indeed. The Golden Boot, that went to Megan Rapinoe, as we've said. Silver Boot went to Alex Morgan. Ellen White's got the Bronze Boot. Okay. Golden Glove went to Sari van Veenendaal. I think that that's a popular decision amongst all of us. The Golden Ball, so this is like the best player ever at the tournament award, went to Megan Rapinoe again. Agree with this or not?
I don't know. Perhaps, I don't know. I don't think I'd say necessarily best player, probably most influential player. Maybe that's, I don't know whether that's slightly different. Clutch player. That's very American. I like it.
Yeah. I'm not sure I do agree with it as much as I do think. I don't know that she's had a great tournament throughout, but yeah, she's been like she's had great moments. She didn't play at all in the semi-final, and I'm not sure that you can be player of the tournament, you know, if you don't even play in the semi-final. And I don't think she was great.
Tim is a stickler for the final.
But for me, it was Rose Lavelle all day long. I thought she was the standout player of this tournament. I think she should have won it, but it was always going to be. These are a mixture of most famous and most popular and I guess most iconic player. And you can't deny that's been Rapinoe at this tournament.
Yeah. OK, well, this one will go down well. But it is a bit confusing because it's called the Adidas Golden Ball. But in second place, I suppose you could say Lucy Bronze has won the Adidas Silver Golden Ball. How many precious metals can you fit into one sentence?
A lot, obviously. Very, very pleased that Lucy Bronze has got an award. It's only second place, though. It can't be that important. Second place is a nonsense.
Oh, Carrie Dunn. And the Bronze Ball went to Rose Lavelle. Oh, and I've just seen this tweet here from Lucy Bronze. Very humbled, she says, to receive a personal award, but really not the trophy I wanted to take home. Proud to be able to represent the Lionesses and know this wouldn't be possible without all my teammates. This one's for them. In other words, I don't want it. And towards our future. Okay, onwards and upwards. Hashtag Ing. The Young Player Award went to Germany's Julia Gwynn.
Yeah.
What did you say when you found this out earlier, Dr. Carrie Dunn?
I can't remember. What did I say?
For scoring one goal.
I did not say that. That was producer Abby.
Oh, okay. Yes, I don't know what the criteria is for the Young Player Award. All right, well, after that bunch of guff, let's go to the Offside Rule Awards. Far more important, these you would be proud to receive. There are five in total. Tim and Carrie, do you have your nominations ready?
I do.
Okay, I'd like your best press conference quote, please. Tim.
So I'm going to go for Phil Neville's gem, post Cameroon, where he said, I came into women's football to, you know, promote the profile of the women's game and show how it's improved. And I kind of just looked at that and heard that rather and thought, thanks, Phil. Really, thank you for doing that for us.
Okay, Carrie.
Sweden's head coach Peter Gerhardsson, who has been a shining light in my life over the past 4 weeks, saying that his players were going to empty every carbohydrate in their bodies against Canada.
All over the pitch, yeah, lovely. And he then went on to speak about mitochondria. Yes, exactly. Yes. It's something I still can't say correctly, so well done for stepping in, Carrie. I've got to go with Megan Rapinoe's show circus. We have to mention this one, of course. Asked about playing France in the quarterfinals after the game that got them there, she said, I hope it's huge and crazy. I hope it's just a total show circus, it's going to be totally awesome. I think this is what everybody wants, and these are the biggest games that you dream about as a kid. Also, bonus points go to Megan Rapinoe, in good form before the final as well. Asked what would ensure the growth of the game globally following this summer's tournament, Megan sang, "Money, money, money." Brilliant. Let's go to award number two now of these offside awards. Best goal celebration, please, Tim.
I have to go for Vivian Miedema's quite pathetic roly-poly when she broke the goal-scoring record for Netherlands, because Viv is someone who's usually a bit too embarrassed to celebrate sometimes, and she felt like she had to do something special for this moment, and I believe it was a nod to her brother Lars, and it was just so appalling.
Why was it a nod to her brother? Do you know how
what
does roly-poly mean to Lars?
I don't know, but I think he'd said that she had to do that or something when she broke the record, and she's very close with her brother, and it was just so astonishingly poorly executed. I loved it.
Carrie.
Ellen White's goggles. I think that has become kind of one of the iconic celebrations.
Do we actually call them goggles? Are they special wacky specs, or are they just...
I think we say goggles.
And how did the goggles come about?
So it's copying the celebration of a player in the German league. She and her husband watched the Bundesliga incessantly, and it was kind of a nod to that when she first did it.
Thrilling scenes in the White household creating that goal celebration. We've got to mention the tea as well, haven't we? The Alex Morgan tea and the Ellen White follow-up that wasn't quite a goal celebration because it wasn't a goal. And also Marta kissing the boot, Tim. This was one of your favourites. Just give us the story again behind that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Marta turned down her boot sponsorship deals ran out last summer. She turned down renewed boot sponsorship deals and chose instead to wear the symbol of gender equality on her boot. So when she stuck away her penalty, her first goal of the tournament, she pointed to that.
Best kit, please, Carrie Dunn.
Norway red kit. I just think it's gorgeous.
Okay, Tim?
I love the France away kit, the polka dots. Mm. That really does it for me.
Tim,
maybe edit that bit out.
We know what's coming to Mrs. Stillman for Christmas, don't we? God, blimey. It also does it for me, Tim, in all honesty, but not the socks. I suggest you don't buy the socks as well. They just remind me of... Oh, I need to catch my breath. They just remind me of school socks. Knee-high school socks with dots on them. All right, award number four. I'd like the best offside moment. Now, this is it's a bit of a play. I'm not really looking for much to do with VAR because I think we're all pretty bored by it, although you can, of course, mention it. But I'd like the best, quirky, weird moment, please.
I think my offside moment will be Demi Stokes about to take a throw-in against the USA, forgetting how to hold a ball, dropping it on her head and it bouncing off her hair for a foul throw. It was just epic.
Tim?
So one of my highlights of the tournament has been Hope Solo's punditry for the BBC. So I think my kind of offside moment would be Hope Solo not holding back on Alex Morgan.
Yes.
And saying that basically she doesn't like it when you kick her and she cries the game off.
Something which Gabby Logan liked to repeat every time the USA played. We've got that now, thank you. I also agree with you on Hope Solo. Jill, she's not the leader I wish her to be. And she started off calling her Jill, but by the end of the tournament, she was Jill Ellis.
Jill Ellis.
Yes. Marta's lipstick, a highlight for you?
Yeah, Marta's lipstick and her... vast press conference about it and her choices behind her colours, the blood red of the lipstick representing the blood that she and her team would leave on the pitch and all that stuff. It was inspiring.
Very
also
good.
Scary.
I'd like to mention Karen Carney. My little takeaway was the eye roll. When Phil, and I can't remember which game it was, but Phil Neville brought her on as a sub, issued her with a load of instructions. Her face doesn't lie, does it? And she gave a big eye roll. That's one for me. And also the weather. That was a bit offside. We weren't expecting it. I mean, it was an unprecedented heat wave. Temperatures tipping over 40 degrees over that very hot quarterfinal weekend. And cooling breaks as well. We saw those, didn't we?
But we also had that mad thunderstorm at the start. Do you remember?
Yes, the Jackie Oakley game. Yeah. Yes, we did.
It seems a very long time ago now.
It does,
but,
doesn't
yeah.
it? And I'm trying to remember who played. And it was Sweden. Was it Sweden?
Sweden.
Chile.
Chile,
yes. Sweden, Chile. For our final award, I'd like you to give me your best moment of legacy / making a point / girl power.
I think I'm going to go with Thailand's coach and the backroom staff after they scored their first ever goal against Sweden. Obviously, they were still getting trounced, but the fact that they'd scored a goal in a World Cup, and it meant so much to everyone on that touchline, and kind of the tears. And yeah, that'll be my kind of takeaway image, I think.
Oh, I've got to say that the Italians really can play good attacking football. Quite brilliant. Tim?
It would be completely remiss of me not to mention Marta's impassioned post-match interview after the elimination against France. Choremno como isso para sorrir no fim.
He really can speak Brazilian, Carrie. Portuguese. He really can speak Portuguese, Carrie. He's not just been making it up all this time.
Evidently. And you know, that's just a wonderful poetic ending to what was a beautiful rant. That, by the way, means cry in the beginning to smile at the end, and that's hugely, hugely powerful. And I thought what was really powerful about it was Marta was not appealing to the Brazilian FA, she was not appealing to the media, she was not appealing to sponsors, she was appealing directly to young girls to go and play football. And I think that A, says a lot about where she thinks the energy is most likely to come from. But secondly, it was just particularly in Brazil, because there's no kind of young players coming through at the moment. It's a real problem. And for her, that was a real like mic drop moment on what was probably her last ever World Cup game.
I like that, a mic drop moment. It's making me want to hear it again. So here it is.
Valorize mais. Chore no começo para sorrir no fim.
We should also mention, of course, the tipping point for England. We had discussions at the start of the tournament. Well, I certainly did when I was doing, you know, rounds of media interviews, as you've been doing, Kerry and Tim as well, about whether the British public, the English public, was engaged with this tournament. And I have to say, I was being very honest up to a certain point and saying, I feel like football fans are watching us, but I don't feel like the mums at my school are talking about it. I don't feel like my mates who don't really watch football are talking about it. And that tipping point really came with that USA game, didn't it? 11.7 million people tuning in, and that being the turning point for it. And you know, it's such an important point to grow the game on from in this country.
Yeah, I mean, the TV viewing figures have been spectacular. A friend of mine messaged me yesterday and said, I have to tell you something. I was like, okay, what? And she said, I didn't watch the semi-final and they lost. Are you going to blame me for it? So I like that even non-football fans are now
totally
kind of
owning it,
getting that kind of superstition that people who've been football fans for a long time already have. But then the question is whether these TV viewing figures can carry on with the domestic game. This is still going to be televised. But also, you know, other England games. I know that it's also kind of a problem in that obviously the next big tournament is the Euros. Haven't got to go through qualification for that. So maybe it's going to kind of drop off a little bit. So we just kind of need to keep that pressure up now and still keep pushing people towards this great product of women's football in England.
Well, all that aside, let's throw this into the mix, which I think it's fair to say is the underlying ultimate legacy / making a point / girl power moment of the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition.
What they might hope to do better than me is get a better grasp of the language in French.
First things first, how's that French coming along?
No better. petit pois. Oeuf, jambon, pommes frites.
Tu as bien mangé?
Crêpes. Every time I leave a restaurant or anywhere, it's like, merci, au revoir. So I've definitely got that down to a fine art now. Donc.
Do you know what tuna is in French?
It begins with a T. Tunon? I don't think there's a difference in this word from my experience at the airport last time when I'd left it behind. Passport. Yes.
And what's the French word that you've learnt for us?
Le foot.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, I'm learning. I'm trying just for you.
Good. Oh my goodness, there's no better way. And I have tears of laughter as I have tears of resplendent joy at the success of this Women's World Cup. Tim, Carrie, that's it. No predictions, no scorelines, no more World Cup. What are we going to do with ourselves?
I'm going to sleep for about a fortnight. Oh no, I've got to write my book.
Oh yes.
But then I shall sleep for a fortnight.
Tim, you've probably got several other tournaments to cover now.
No, because the Copa America finishes tonight as well. So I've got absolutely no idea what I'm going to do with myself. But Arsenal women play at Emirates Stadium in 3 weeks' time. So That'll be when it will start again for me.
Back on it. Well, we best say a few thank yous. Well, in the studio, we've had ballers and current and former Lionesses, Claire Rafferty, Siobhan Chamberlain, Anita Asante, Helen Ward, Jilly Flaherty, Renee Hector, Danielle Carter, Gemma Davidson and Matt Beard. So thanks to all of them. And in our journo contingent, Anne-Marie Batson, Glenn Moore, Harriet Drudge, Matt Davis-Adams and Robin Cowan, plus the many others on the phone, including Lindsay Hooper over in France. To those who've helped us produce over 18 hours of content across 27 episodes, that's to Charlie Jones, Lucy Oliver, Abby Patterson, Ben Green and Ian McIntosh. Tim and Carrie, you've been, quite frankly, amazing for putting up with me. Thank you so much for sharing the studio space, and I'm sure we'll hear from you both very soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, we must thank all of you for listening to this Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. You're all brilliant, and we'll speak to you again next season. For now, au revoir, à plus tard, à bientôt. See you later.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.